Final Play Podcast would like to welcome you to the following presentation of the NBA. Just before we kick everything off, I think now that we know who has the best strip clubs in the country, now that James Harden is going to Brooklyn.
I think I heard, it was on a podcast actually, it was on a podcast. Bill Simmons said, he said single-handedly the New York strip club will increase its value by the James Harden trade.
Oh, absolutely. Strip clubs are going to be lining up to make him a serious VIP.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Final Play Podcast. It's obviously pretty straightforward going from the song and what we were just talking about. This is an all-NBA pod. And obviously, straight off the bat, I woke up when we had this trade. There was a huge, huge trade for James Harden to go to the Nets. So I'll read it all out first. So it was a four-team deal. The Nets got James Harden and a second rounder from the Cavs. The Rockets got Victor Oladipo, Dante Exum, Karučius from the Nets. Four first rounders, and then four first pick swaps.
That's just gigantic. Like, that's gigantic. And,
well, three technically, three unprotected, and then, like, yeah, and then there's Milwaukee's 2022 first-round pick via Cleveland. So that's probably going to be nothing anyway.
That's going to be nothing. And those four first-round, at least a couple of those first-round picks are going to be, they're going to be like the picks that New Orleans got from Milwaukee and L.A. They're going to be worthless.
I think 24 and 26 could be very good. Just like
They could be valuable.
The
ones that are coming up, worthless.
The Pacers picked up Caris LeVert from the Rockets and the second rounder. And the Cavs picked up their 15th center, Jared Allen, and Taurean Prince. So, firstly, I'll pose a question.
Who's running the point there?
Kevin Love. when I got up, it was like on just wildfire. But what was your initial reaction when you heard the trade? Straight away.
I wasn't surprised to start off with because I watched the press conference from the day before where he's basically just coming out and just saying, we're not good enough. We're broken.
I've done everything possible.
I've done everything. I love this city. I've done everything possible. Yeah. For this team and everything on that. And it's just like, well, I think it's the other way around. I think this team has done everything to accommodate you.
Yep.
And now you have turned around and just absolutely just doused the place in petrol and set it alight.
It's probably a good way of putting it.
Well, DeMarcus Cousins and John Wall were in that same press conference after that, I can't think of who they played, who they got beat by.
They played the Lakers. Because they knew they were a benchmark. They actually played the Lakers. And then the first thing DeMarcus said, like when he, because I clearly would have heard it, he said, well, to be honest, I came here to play with John Wall, not with James Harden. He was very brutally honest about that.
Yeah, and so, the word disrespect was used a lot.
So same thing I sort of thought when I heard it at the start was, I wasn't surprised that he went to net, although there was a couple of late plays from the 76ers and I read the Warriors as well, the Golden State Warriors.
Obviously, the strip clubs just ain't as good in Philly.
Well, clearly not. I think when I sat down and sort of thought about it, I just went, well, I got more interested, not so much between the Rockets and the Nets. I mean, the Rockets did pick up. Oh, I'm a little bit interested in the Rockets, but just the other two teams, that were involved in that trade, like the Pacers and the Cavs. I mean,
it was the only way that it was going to work. Like, obviously, you know, it had to have been some sort of three-team deal, and then Indiana are the absolute winners out of this by dumping an expiring contract for next year in Oladipo, who's coming off an injury, for Caris LeVert for the future.
Yeah, I mean, I still...
I don't know what Houston were thinking.
Well, Victor Oladipo, I mean, all I can think is that they're thinking he was, before that terrible injury, he was a top 20 NBA player.
He was an all-star. I mean, his star was ascending.
So winners, or if we throw the winners and losers, I thought the Pacers getting rid of an expiring and then, picking up LeVert, who has shown when the stars aren't there that he can produce 20, 25 points a game.
Absolutely.
And I know, look, honestly, and I said it last week, and I'll say it every time about Jared Allen. I do like Jared Allen. I know they picked up another center. I kind of thought, up until I've seen a game with Andre Drummond, I kind of thought, well, that just basically means he's trade value now. Andre Drummond.
Well, his deal's like 26 or 27 million too. So, but I really like Andre Drummond. I don't know why there's a lot of the disrespect about and around him.
Yeah.
But I like what he did. He is one of those 100% effort guys.
Well, he got the last
game. Can still get you 30 points, and he doesn't need to have plays run for him, mm-hmm. and he doesn't have to have the ball, and he doesn't have to shoot 8 threes a game.
I think it was the last game against the Knicks, I believe, just one that's just gone. He got a 33 and 23 anyway, I believe.
Yeah,
33 points and 23 rebounds. No, I like Andre Drummond too. I'm a big Jared Allen fan, so I only say they're winners because they're getting a 22-year-old really on the cheap. And honestly, for all that they gave, all purposes, Rockets kind of were winners. James Harden was toxic there. They did pick up 3 players and then a huge amount of draft picks. So they had to be winners at least to get that.
Well, I think that was the main point of it, and that was always the talking point for this trade, was going to be there's got to be, whether it's multiple players and it has to be multiple picks.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just look at what Paul George commanded.
Well, that's true. It's hard to call the Nets losers because we don't know how it's going to work. I mean, that probably slides into our next point that we wanted to talk about, but... I mean, essentially, the Nets now have, you know, 3 of nearly the best offensive players that, you know, of the last 10 years in James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving. So,
it's really funny that I was listening to the radio and it breezed past me so quick that I didn't get a chance to sort of write it down or anything. But out of 7 players in the history of the NBA that have got a usage rate of 29% or more, 3 of them are now on the same team. That's in the history of the NBA. And I totally missed the 4 other players that they were talking about. It just zoomed past me so quick. And I'm just like, what? 3 of them are currently in the NBA right now. And now these 3 are on the same team together.
I think I heard Russell Westbrook in that as well. Which just
that would probably make sense.
So I don't. I guess we just have to. I mean, this slides into our next point. Not only will we talk about the Kyrie antics that we'll talk about in a sec, but just essentially what happens? You just said it then. There's 3 players that need the ball in their hands. What happens?
So, well, you just all I think of is go back to the last big 3, you know, shall we say big 3s of the past decade or so, you know, the Miami big 3 in LeBron, D Wade, and Chris Bosh, who ended up being sacrificing the most there. You look at the Cleveland big three, you know, from 2000, well, whatever, to 2016, 2015, you know, in K-Love, Kyrie Irving, and LeBron James, who sacrificed the most there, whether it be numbers, touches, shots. And then you have a look at the Golden State one, which is the most recent, with KD, Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson.
Well, he's got it as another Brooklyn player, yeah.
No, that's right. Exactly. That's what I mean. It just seems to be revolving around a few certain players that there's a common denominator in a lot of these big threes. But look, that's the thing, you know. Obviously, Chris Bosh was the one that was that sacrificed the most, but not so much it made him a better player. Like he evolved his game. He became a 3-point shooter, and it looked like he sort of, I guess, took it fairly well to take a backseat to LeBron and Dwayne Wade. Kevin Love in that championship side of 2016 that knocked off the 73-10 Warriors. You know, Kevin Love, you look at the numbers that he was putting up in Minnesota, like he was a great rebounder. I think there was a season there where he averaged 14, 15 rebounds a game. You know, he was a 20, 25 points per game player, and his numbers came down drastically.
In
that big three. And then you look at Klay Thompson. You know, Klay Thompson clearly took a back seat to Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, even with, you know, the way that Klay Thompson is, you know, putting up those 60-plus point games in three quarters. Like, he can be an explosive scorer when he wants to be.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, who in this big three is going to be the expendable and who is going to be the third wheel?
So from what you just said then, right, so the two things that stood out for me, well, the two players that stood out for me, you said Kevin Love and Klay Thompson. So, they took a back seat, so to speak, but they also still commanded and still got, you know, big contracts. So money to me, sort of, if they're good enough, as all three of these players are, money has to be taken out because they're all really making the same money.
Money's not going to be – money's not going to be anything for this.
That's right. So let's throw that out of the way. Only because, I mean, he was young and all that. And I honestly could see he's got an MVP. He's done everything but get a championship. I honestly think James Harden can easily take a step back. He's proved it at Oklahoma, albeit he was young and he was
His game is so evolved now, so totally different to what it was back then. And he's just had, 7 years with Houston where they've thrown absolutely everything at him to try and give him success. And he's molded his game now into one of the most crazy ISO ball. He's going to if he's going to take a back seat and change his game, I don't think he's capable of doing that.
I think because he's done it before, I think he can. You really called all three of them. I know who you think Kyrie, I believe, if you wanted to sort of talk about that.
The only reason I think Kyrie Irving is because he's going to be the quintessential third wheel. Because KD, like you said, albeit in Oklahoma City, but they have got the chemistry. They have played together before, and I think he's going to be the one on the outside looking in, like looking at those guys, because just look at what they did today. Have a look at what KD and James Harden did today.
That's right.
Triple double for James Harden and 42 points for KD. And if you're exactly Kyrie Irving and you're sitting at home doing your 5-day COVID protocol quarantine, which is BS. 5 days, give me a break. You know, sitting there, you know, opening up your fat wallet and handing $50,000 over to the NBA because that's what they fined him for his, like you said, antics. If you're looking at that, that's me. What's going through your mind?
Well, I mean, I'll pose this one too, and this sort of makes this is why it probably rules one player out. 5 seconds left out of all those three. Who takes that final shot?
Kevin Durant, absolutely.
That's exactly right.
Durant.
That's easy. So he can't. That's what I thought as well. He is to me. So he's 7 foot. He is the best pure forward shooter I've ever seen. Ever.
He's one of the most unguardable jump shooters you'll see, because he's so tall, so long, so lengthy.
And he can,
that
and
when he raises up to shoot, you simply can't get a hand up near him.
And it's a beautiful shot. It's something he's what you said. He is unguardable. I think he's the best pure forward shooter I've ever seen. So he has to have the final shot. So it has to be hard.
That's not even a question.
It has to be hard on a Kyrie. It's those two. Like what? How? Well, I don't know. I'm assuming they would know each other from All-Star and probably a lot of things.
But that's a week. Yeah, that's a weekend here, a couple of days there. Yeah, KD and James Harden have played multiple seasons together. Seasons
and finals.
80 plus games plus playoffs plus a finals appearance.
Yeah. So I honestly could see Kyrie taking a step back. I don't know if Kyrie will take a step back.
That's where I think the trouble starts to brew.
I mean, his so-called antics. He went to his sister's birthday, and
I don't think any of that is confirmed or anything at the moment. Yeah, I think everybody's just putting two and two together, and he clearly was violating NBA protocols at the moment. So, and it was for days and days, he was uncontactable by the organization, not just by the coach or anything like that. The GM, Sean Marks, was trying to get in contact with him and nothing. So it's antics already. What are we, 12, 13 games or so into the season? Like it just, I don't know. He beats to his own drum.
He beats to his own drum. He's always beaten to his own drum.
But over the last couple of years, especially with how he left the Celtics and stuff like that, and now the few years that he's been with Brooklyn, like that's been accentuated tenfold.
It's not
in
so
the
much
last couple of years.
And the dumb thing is, I'm assuming they pay him all this money, they would at least look, the team pay the money. At the end of the day, I don't know how to say it, but I guess at the end of the day, you should have respect for that team. There's no reason why he could have just let them know, said, look, there's something going on. There's all this stuff that's been going on with America and all that stuff
and
I just want to take some time off.
He's playing it perfectly by saying that it's personal. It's personal reasons. It's the easiest get out in the book, because it doesn't matter how many people, what the media comes out and try and press him on the subject. He's just going to say, look, it's personal and I don't want to talk about it. That's the easiest get out in the book.
I said to you before we got on this, I don't think he stays there. I think they'll have to realize what they have in Kyrie that every team has, and I don't think he stays there. I mean, they don't need him. They proved it today by the win over Orlando, albeit they just beat Orlando, and the biggest problem is defense. I mean, that's pretty...
defensively like that. Yeah, it's, I mean, KD is obviously a better defender, but... It's going to be the same thing. It's James Harden going to get picked on, in that sort of pick and roll game, and whether that they're going to put him under pressure and whether or not he wants to put in the effort on the defensive side.
So I don't think he stays there. I don't know who they go after. I think they need it's clearly a defensive player, and obviously like for like money. I haven't sat down and thought about it. I don't have to go after a center or. I don't know. It has to be a defensive player, but
they've got DJ there now. Like he's quite happily smiling, as he lies in bed at night now, because they've turfed the young buck out of there and Jared Allen, so he just slips straight into the starting center role, and him and KD are boys, so it's just like, oh man, how convenient.
So I don't know what happens there. I mean, they got the win today. It'll be fascinating just to wait and see. I don't know where he goes. I don't think Kyrie stays there. I don't know if people would want to take Kyrie. That's the other thing.
There'll be plenty of teams that think that they can, so-called in inverted commas, fix Kyrie. But it's like you said, you've just got to be willing to put up with you know, these antics that just constantly keep arising with this player. Like I think they run it through this year. Obviously, it's championship or bust. Yeah. And Steve Nash and Mike D'Antoni have got their work cut out for them this year, because now, well, as if the expectation on them before wasn't pretty much championship or bust, now that expectation has just been completely blown out of the water, and it is absolutely championship or bust.
Has to be, has no choice. They got rid of all those draft picks.
There's no choice now. It is absolutely, we must win. People would probably think that them making the Eastern Conference Finals and maybe losing would be a failure. Them getting to the NBA Finals and losing would be a disappointment, but would still, I think people out there would still class that as a failure.
And I would. And I mean, they've gone all in.
It's not the fact that they've sort of built up to this sort of stature. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, last year they were a fringe playoff team. Obviously, KD wasn't there. He was hurt all year. Kyrie was hurt a lot of the year. So off the back of their young stars that were there, they snuck into the playoffs. And now all of a sudden it's not even a gradual ascension. They have gone from, you know, we could be a 7 or an 8 seed, and they've just gone, no, absolutely, we're just going to be a number one seed, and we're going to win a championship this year. I think that's too quick a growth, and they're going to have to. Some of those guys that are on the bench that are left there now they're going to have to fill the void, because those guys can't. Like, they all can't play 48 minutes.
And I think they've only got 2 years. They've got this year and next year, because that's when James Harden contract runs out next year.
That's right. It'd be interesting to see how many minutes per game all three of them play on the court.
Well, I believe this player would have been involved if he wasn't injured. And I believe he's sort of sitting there going, well, you know, everyone sort of forgot about me, and I can still contribute. And that's Spencer Dinwiddie. I think he's a great defensive player. He proved it last year, and he also proved he could get them to the, well, albeit the first round. But, I think he would have been somewhere involved. And I don't know if it's like a character. Like, if he was involved, he probably would have to involve other teams. I think that's why they had to involve other teams. But who knows? I mean, It'll be fascinating. It'll be fascinating to watch them. I mean, yeah, when they'll
be,
three of them,
we will be talking about the Brooklyn Nets a lot.
Oh, I think it'll be nearly every week, if not every couple of weeks, even if it's good or bad.
That's the thing, and that's what it's going to be. It's almost going to be the any publicity is good publicity, but the daggers will be out very quickly, and I think the media will give them a very short leash. Like, you know, if they start to, it looks like there's an implosion happening, then especially in that town, especially in New York City, like the biggest media market in the NBA, like the media there is ruthless, like absolutely ruthless. And if things start to go pear shaped a little bit, then woof. They are going to be there. They are going to be like buzzards all over a piece of chicken.
One player that seems to be, I guess, flourishing, albeit on a team that really isn't flourishing, is LaMelo Ball, the rookie.
He's come out this past week. You know, the youngest player in NBA history to have a triple double.
And I think also, if I'm reading correctly, no, I am reading that correctly. He is. In rookies this year, out of every single rookie, he's leading every single stat. And that is points per game, that is rebounds, that is assists, that is steals. Like, that's...
That's the thing. They are absolutely... They're relying on him. Charlotte are relying on him. To take some pressure off some of the guys there. You know, they've got a lot of young pieces there, and Gordon Hayward, who I think at the moment is Gordon Hayward is balling at the moment. So
yeah, I think we'll talk about him later. We need to talk about him later. But I don't know. I'm not going to say I was shocked, because I think he'll win personally, I think he'll win Rookie of the Year. But and it's one of those teams where he can sort of showcase as much as he needs to. I was just pleasantly shocked, I guess, that he got there that sort of that quickly.
Yeah, and look, you know, I think, albeit it was an injury-shortened season when he was over here playing for the Illawarra Hawks.
Yeah,
he'd absolutely showed his, you know, his potential over here, whereas the other big, you know, the supposed big draft pick that was over here in RJ Hampton, I think, was a bit of a flop in the NBL. So, he absolutely shown that he is a star in the making. He is totally outshining his older brother.
That was literally my next question, but I thought the same thing. Yeah, got yep.
He's totally outshining him. I think it's the fact that, you know, the league is new for him. Everything is a first time experience. Whereas Lonzo Ball, to me, is not engaged, and I don't think he wants to be in New Orleans. Like, I don't think he ever wanted to be there. And if he keeps putting up the numbers that he keeps putting up and playing the hot garbage that he is at the moment, there's no chance that New Orleans takes on a rookie extension.
Oh, they won't. No.
And he's not going to get the money that he thinks he's worth.
No, I don't believe he's going to have one of those contract seasons that everybody has to do it, because I don't think he has proved it at all.
He hasn't this year. There was bits and pieces there last year where he was a bit of a streaky shooter. And this year he's like, out of anyone that's shot like more than 30 threes this year, just on catch and shoot threes, he's shooting like 7 for 39 just on pure catch and shoot threes. And that's something that he has to be so much better at if New Orleans are going to, if they're going to succeed, because at this point in time, they cannot space the floor for Zion and Brandon Ingram.
It is
impossible. And JJ Redick has been in a major slump to start this year. He's starting to get better, and his shooting percentage is starting to go up, but they cannot stretch the floor. Absolutely cannot stretch the floor. And that just means the lane's clogged for Zion. And even, I mean, Brandon Ingram's even putting up better numbers than what he was last year with a floor that can't be spread.
I watched the game that they played against the Lakers, and man, this is Zion. Zion is, if there was crowds and if there was an NBA All-Star game, he would relish it. He's
Showtime.
He's Showtime. And he's putting up the numbers too. He's also putting up the numbers.
No, that's right. And he's taken, what is it? He's taken 5 jump shots outside the painted area all year.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like taking 2 threes, all year, and then he's taken a couple of like elbow, like just outside the left elbow jumpers, and that's it. Everything is around the hoop or, you know, in the paint. So
that's fine. And
he's still putting up, what is he, 22 points a game? Imagine what would happen if they could spread things out, if the Pels could spread things out.
Think of it like what Shaq did. Like, I'm not saying he's exactly like Shaq, but Shaq used his sizable to get into the lane, to clog the lane, and to get those easy buckets. This is just sort of like what Zion's doing. But
except Zion's obviously a hell of a lot shorter, and there was a couple of times where AD sort of blocked him, and you know that there's I watched that game as well until about 8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, where the Pels just absolutely crapped all over themselves, and the lead got out to like 15, and I went, cool, I don't need to watch this game anymore because New Orleans are going to lose. So, I turned it off and was very disgusted in the end score. But they're on a rough stretch at the moment too. Like, just
Your team has potential, and that's probably the best way to put it. Potential.
It is. Yeah. It's the potential's there. It's the same sort of thing. It's the first lot of daggers that are going to come out are going to be for Stan Van Gundy.
Well, that's what literally I was just about to say. That daggers shouldn't come out for Stan Van Gundy in his first year it's yes, they're 4-7. They're not doing great. I think he still needs to work with this team.
Oh, absolutely. They are a much better defensive team at the moment in defending the paint, and because they've got guys like Steven Adams there, but they are absolutely horrendous at defending the three. And unfortunately, the league is a three-point shooting league now. And if you can't defend the three, then you're going to go a long way. I mean, it's going to be a hard, hard slog to try and win games and try and sneak yourself into the playoffs in the Western Conference, where you may have to be 5, 6, 7 games over 500 to get an 8 seed.
I like that round 17 or pick 17 that they picked up, that Nickeil Alexander-Walker. He's good.
Like last year, like, I didn't think he showed a whole lot of potential, but he's been on a little bit of a hot streak at the moment. Yeah. He scored 37, and I think he had 8 rebounds as well against the Clippers a few nights ago, and then against the Lakers, he was still sort of on that little bit of a hot streak shooting.
12 points he backed that up with. Yeah, he looks pretty good.
So that's not terrific, but coming off a 37-point night the night before, like, he still shot super, high efficiency.
Yeah.
It was just, I think, sort of Brandon Ingram and Zion tried to take on that game a little bit too much, just purely on the fact that they'll play in the purple and gold.
Well, that's true. I mean, wasn't it so much that AD had a fair game, but
LeBron only had, like, up until three-quarter time, I think he only had like 8 shots.
Yeah, but he ended up 11 assists, 21 points. He
exactly.
Like, just he amazes me every time I watch him play, just because I guess you look at him and you know him and everything like that, but he's so strong.
The Lakers haven't lost away from home this year.
Yeah.
And as of a couple of days ago, just as I was watching the battle for New York, the Nets and the Knicks, which cost me money. Brutal. Absolutely brutal.
Well, you said you specifically, and I know this is off subject, but in an NBA fantasy group, I mean, the bet that you did, there's about 4 of them that did the same bet. And there was one person named Aiden, shout out to Aiden, that said, do not bet on the Knicks. You should never bet on the Knicks.
No, that's right. Exactly.
And they all went, no. And they looked the good, Julius Randle. And anyway, they all went to shit like you did.
That's right. Yeah, no, I had him in a multi. And it was that was the losing leg. So anyway.
Which they
should have. They were just sort of sprouting off some stats about, it's so sad seeing the Garden empty. Like, that's just, that's so sad. Like, to have that building empty with no fans in it. But they were talking about, sort of head to head this year, away versus home teams. And the away teams had won 5 more games than what the home teams had. So the away teams actually have the ascendancy at this point of the season. So 5 more away teams have won than home teams this year, which is just goes to show that, obviously, with no crowd there, that the best team will absolutely win.
That's exactly right. I mean, look at the NFL. We know it's something else we talk about it, but best team wins. Doesn't the crowd sort of factor goes completely out of it?
That's right. And then certain teams that have got that home crowd advantage. And it's all just been completely taken away. And to hear that stat, and you're just like, well, wow, that's unbelievable to hear that the away teams are doing better than what the home teams are.
I think I might have said it last week, I'm not sure, but once I've seen the Lakers in the last couple of games, I don't think anybody. Honestly, I can't see anybody beating us at the moment. If we get to the finals, LeBron's arrest. It's there's too many. I wouldn't say that's weapons, not, but there's too many.
It's disgusting.
I still can't work out Dennis Schroeder. I still can't work out how we got Montrezl Harrell. Marc Gasol we got on the cheap, and that's cool. But I still can't work out how we got Montrezl Harrell. But I don't care because I mean, if you look at, say, the so-called big three in the Brooklyn Nets, while KD can defend any of these guys and most likely have to defend AD or LeBron, then who's going to defend the other one?
That's right.
And then you've got, you know, Montrezl Harrell. You've got, you know, a Marc Gasol that's not really doing okay, but he's just chipping in when he needs. You know, Contavious Caldwell-Pope is playing consistently better this year than he did last year.
That's right. So, well, that's it. To me, they made an upgrade. And don't get me wrong, I love Rajon and Rondo, but they had significant upgrade in Dennis Schroeder, who absolutely got screwed out of the six man of the year award last year.
100% For the guy totally that's on his same, for the like, guy that's on his
Montrez,
same team.
No, give me Montrez.
No,
Harry,
I agree.
He's such a softy. He got hit in the stomach there by Zion sort of pushing his arm out. And he went down as if he was about to have a baby. Like, give me a break. What a softie.
That's a nice segue to the next thing I wanted to talk about. That was a couple of key injuries, so to speak. Ja Morant's injury, firstly.
Yeah, that looked like a really, really nasty ankle turn in the first week of the season. And
Memphis
sort of struggled a little bit. You know, they're coming back at the moment now. They've won four on the trot, so... and they won today, and Ja Morant actually returned today. I think he only scored 17 points, but he returned today, so that's going to sort of spur them along at the moment. The big one that's the crushing blow, I think, this year so far. Like there's always those injuries, and usually it's a guy named Derrick Rose. That everybody loves and everybody wants to see succeed. But this year, and I think over the last 2 years, it's been Markelle Fultz. Everybody wants to see this kid get his shit straight, start playing well, and he's playing well. He's putting up good numbers for Orlando, and he's ruptured his ACL against the Cavs last week, and that's his season done. Like, that is just it's a cruel, cruel game sometimes.
I honestly thought he looked great last year. I know they snuck in, but he was looking, I wouldn't say great, but he was looking okay last year. And they started the season off well. So I thought he was playing pretty well, to be completely honest. Like,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
I wouldn't say he justified his number one pick, but he was getting there. He was complimenting the Orlando Magic.
Those mental demons that supposedly he had, like, you know, everybody talking about his jump shot being broken and stuff like that. Like, his time at Philly was just, a disaster. But him sort of breaking free, getting away from the Sixers and having that time away from there and playing for Orlando, getting healthier. And it's, I mean, he's looking more like a number one pick than what he ever has.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And for that to happen like that, that's a brutal blow. And especially to a team like Orlando, who really need someone like that, you know, a good spark off the bench, or just some excitement there in Orlando.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, Orlando aren't, they're not playing too bad sort of this year, I guess. I mean, they're not lights out. They started pretty hot, obviously.
Well, they started 4-0. Like, it's the first time the franchise has ever gone 4-0, and that's with guys like Penny and Shaq and players like that. They've never gone 4-0 to start a season. But they've lost five on the trot now, and I think I think that to the players there, I think was a cruel blow as well. Like, I think they're really going to miss him. Guys like Evan Fournier. Terrence Ross, the evergreen Terrence Ross is there. Like, they're the guys like that, Vukovic, they're all going to, Aaron Gordon, they're all going to have to step up in the absence of Markelle Fultz. And it just tests a team like Orlando, just tests their depth. They lost DJ Augustine this year. I just think that that they could be in a little bit of free fall at the moment.
They were lucky they drafted at 15 Cole Anthony, who's doing okay at the moment.
I really like Cole Anthony.
Yeah, me too.
He could sort of step into those Markelle Fultz minutes. And I think that the more experience and the more quick experience that he gets, you know, this year, if he plays a lot of minutes, I think that will rapidly develop him into a really good player.
Aaron Gordon, I think, is one of a few players, and I'll put this to you next week, but just he is one of a few players I want to talk about next week and who I believe's going to be traded this year.
He's such an enigma.
I know, and that's why I love to talk. He is an enigma because I don't know how to take him. We'll talk about it more next week because I'll just put it on
the
spot.
And the thing is,
now,
too, like you don't get a really good look. You know, we're probably taking away from him, but you don't really get a good look at Aaron Gordon a lot because Orlando Magic games just aren't on TV unless you've got full league pass, and unless you either support the Orlando Magic or the team that you support is playing the Orlando Magic. And you're probably not getting a good lot of eyeballs on him, and they're just not a marquee team that TNT and ESPN and those networks put on all that often. So you really don't get a good look at him.
And was there any other sort of injuries you want to touch on before we look at a couple of teams?
No, not so much injuries. But you know, people that have come back from injuries this year. And I think the biggest one so far this year, to me anyway, is Kristaps Porzingis. Mm-hmm. Made his debut, or you know, his season debut against Charlotte this week for Dallas. So I think that's going to help Luka a lot, you know, in Porzingis there. You know, I'm pretty sure we touched on it in the last NBA pod about, is he ever going to fulfill his potential? And are teams too scared to let him off the leash? Or does he not have the confidence in himself to let himself off the leash? Because you've seen what he's done in New York. Like, he set New York alight when he was there until that injury brought him down. But I just hope he doesn't sort of turn into one of those players, like, especially coming off this injury, that just relies on the three. Like, he could be such, you know, a multi-dimensional player. I think that's what he'll start off doing. I think he'll start relying on the three at the moment to sort of get some scoring happening. And hopefully as the season progresses, he'll sort of get the confidence that he can be that beast that a lot of guys his size are good, you know, like Joel Embiid are good at facing up to the basket, rather than a back-to-the-basket post-type player. So I'd like to see him get his feet underneath him, so to speak, and live up to the potential that he can be, because he's just, at this point in time, I think his career is a little bit sort of floundering at the moment. He's just not quite living up to expectations. But when healthy, that is one of the most dangerous duos in the league.
And that's the biggest question mark. When healthy,
that's right. When healthy.
I think.
Like Kyrie Irving. Like, when was the last time Kyrie Irving played a full season? Oh, let's see. Never.
Not never. I think he has. I think he's played.
If it was early on in his career, I'd be very surprised if he's ever played 80 games in a season. In a regular season.
I think they've got, to be honest, I haven't looked at his contract. I might have a quick look of it now, but I think they persevered personally with Kristaps Porzingis because to me, at the end of the day, Luka's only 21 years old. So,
no, that's right.
Which is absolutely crazy just to throw 20, that out there.
22 or 23?
So, yeah, he's 21. He's 21 this year. 21 this year. Which is absolutely crazy. So the reason I say you probably persevere with Kristaps is because he's 21 and Kristaps has got a 5-year contract ending in 23-24. So you could probably persevere with Kristaps for a couple of years, see if it works. And if it doesn't, then, you know, when Luke is about 23-24 and he'll probably sign a huge contract anyway, then maybe pair him with someone or look towards the end of the year. I think you could persevere with Kristaps, to be completely honest. I think they still need another piece there at Dallas, to be honest. But I was looking at the teams, just standout teams. I know I said the 76ers before we got on, but you know what? The Jazz have really impressed me a little bit, more than I thought. The Utah Jazz.
Utah last year should have been a lot better than what they were, and the Bogdanovich injury at the end of the year really, really tanked their playoff run.
Because you're exactly right. And Bogdanovich has been playing well so far. Just when I watched that game against the Bucks, where they just absolutely scorched the Bucks, is that they, Donovan Mitchell's clearly their go-to guy, but they have, they're pretty, we said this last year, they're deep. They spread the points around. I mean, Jordan Clarkson got 26 in that game. Bogdan got 20. Royce O'Neal got 18. So Donovan got, 32. But I just, they're surprising me because I guess I forgot about them. It's probably the best way to put it. I didn't forget about them so much.
I think a lot of people forget about the Utah Jazz. Like, especially in the last few years, like, the potential's there.
Yeah.
And when it comes to their playoff runs, they just seem to just sort of flop on their face a little bit, when the playoffs come around that's usually the same thing that everybody always says is when the playoffs come around, the game slows down. It's more half court, focused offense. Spreading the floor comes even more imperative. And Donovan Mitchell can be a fairly streaky shooter, but when you've got somebody like, Rudy Gobert, who sort of clogs up the middle a little bit. Mike Conley's there now. This is his second year with Utah. But if you've got guys that, Joe Ingles, if you've got guys there that can spread the floor, then you'll have a lot of success. Yep. With somebody like, have a look at some of the eyeball popping numbers that Donovan Mitchell put up last year, just in the restart and in the playoffs.
I know. That's probably because I don't think about him. No one talks about him, but he's a great player, Donovan Mitchell. He really is. He's pretty streaky as well, but he can really light it up. Electric dunks, just he can shoot the ball.
No, it's mean. Yeah, he is an absolute go-to kind of guy. Like to me, he reminds me of Damian Lillard. He's a little bit taller than Damian Lillard, but that's the kind of the kind of play that he reminds me of.
There was a couple before we look at, I guess, finishing up. There was a few players you wanted to look at or. We usually call it studs and duds, but I guess focus players. Is that what we're going to call it? Focus?
Yeah, look, I don't know. It's just sort of players in focus, I guess. Like, it's not very original anything like that. I just think, whether it's good or bad, there's sort of focus on a couple of players where, whether they're stinking up the joint or playing really well. And, I think there's a few players this week, or the past week and a half or so that have really been playing out of their skin at the moment. And the first one for me is Paul George.
Yeah. I mean, I think, honestly, when he signed that, when he signed that contract, from last year, people, when they got to the finals, a lot of the stuff was put onto him, not so much Kawhi, but a lot of stuff was put onto Paul George of how he's playing in the finals and, is he a really good player? Is he that number two player? And contract...
That's always been the knock on Paul George can't get it done in the playoffs.
That's right, but when he signed that contract, I think that's sort of motivated him or spurred him on.
He didn't have that great playoff run last year either, in the Orlando restarted in the playoffs. Like, that was...
Yeah,
he had some stinkers of games, and unfortunately it all comes back on to Kawhi Leonard because he's the one on those extremely broad shoulders that's got to shoulder the load. They absolutely need Paul George to keep putting, not so much to keep putting up these kind of numbers, because at the moment he's shooting like 52% from three. Like it's crazy. He's like 26 points a game, like six rebounds, six assists. Like he's putting up some terrific numbers, but those numbers need to stay consistent.
Yeah.
And he has to stay efficient and has to stay, this sort of dangerous for them to do anything in the playoffs. He has to be reliable. That's the thing. He has to be consistent and reliable. And throughout his career, like throughout his playoffs runs, in Indiana. Like, he run into some really good teams, you know, run into the LeBron Heat teams and the LeBron Cavs teams a couple of times. So it comes up to matchups as well. But, you know, the last year with the Clippers, obviously it didn't end so well in Oklahoma City as well, where he had that, you know, that 35-foot three-pointer by Damian Lillard shot over the top of him, which is just a horrendous shot. But it went in, and Damian Lillard's the hero and waving goodbye to him and stuff like that. So he's on the back end of some poor playoff moments. And the other thing is, too, to call yourself Playoff P when you're clearly not a clutch performer
you are
in the playoffs, then that is just the most ludicrous thing you could ever call yourself.
Hey, I mean...
We're kind of ragging on him now, but he is playing exceptionally well this year.
He is, and I think I'm just reading an article about it now. So the reason he said he spoke to ESPN and he said, I had to address that I'm a playoff weakness. You know, I'm coming back with a vengeance. He said he wanted to, I guess he told teammates entering the season that he was going to return to his form that helped him finish third in the MVP voting back in the 2018-2019 season. He goes, because he didn't want to be seen as a weakness for a team when he clearly isn't. So, maybe, like you said, maybe people are saying he's a playoff. Well, he's not playoff P. Maybe if he's just a playoff hindrance, that it's spurred him on. He needs to prove it in the playoffs, clearly.
Well, the thing was, he was the man. He was the man in Indiana. So,
well, that's right.
You know, that you know, obviously didn't sort of help him either. But now he's on a championship contender. You know, he's got Kawhi Leonard there. They're still a fairly deep sort of team. The Clippers. They got the second or third best, fourth best record in the league at the moment. They just need to. Those two more than any other need to have as much court time as possible. You know, I'm talking about Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, because they just simply didn't play enough games together last year, whether it be load management or, you know, Paul George coming off those shoulder surgeries after being traded from OKC that gave him a lot of trouble. So they just simply didn't play enough games together last year. They need to put those demons to bed, because it just, like, the Clippers just as a franchise, they're almost a cursed franchise. Like, look at the good teams that they've had recently, and yet they still cannot make a Western Conference final, let alone an NBA finals.
The other player you said you wanted, well, I think you remember, like, one of the players you wanted to focus on, we might have talked about him earlier, what I think we did, was Gordon Hayward. Probably don't have to touch on him too much, but
Gordon Hayward, man, he's been balling. He put up a career high 44 points this week against Atlanta. Boy, haven't Atlanta fallen off the face of the planet in the last week or so? Just like the Knicks started hot and they've just fallen flat on their face.
Yeah, not sure. I do not know what's going on there. I don't know what's going on there. Yeah, no, Gordon Hayward. I mean, I suppose he's got to justify his. I still think it was too much signing him to a $30 million a year contract, but.
At the start of the season, he's doing his best to live up to it, and, you know, Charlotte aren't playing terribly bad at the moment. They're a couple of games under 500, but they're still in the eighth spot in the East at the moment, and, you know, with guys, like PJ Washington and obviously LaMelo Ball young guys are on that roster. Like, this is his team now. Like, he's trying to go out there and prove that he can be the man on his own team.
Yeah, he has to. I think he has to. He doesn't have a choice.
The numbers that he's putting up recently. He's playing really well. I like the way he's going this year.
Was there another player you wanted to focus on before we look at finishing up?
Look, I think the eyeball popping numbers that Julius Randle, Julius Randle, man, he is balling at the moment on a Knicks team that started off relatively good to start the year, and now they've lost five on the trot, and they can't get out of their own way. But the guy that's doing all the heavy lifting there is Julius Randle.
I always when that trade sort of he wasn't there at this time, but like I don't know, I always wanted to keep him. Always wanted to keep him. And I'm not, and
I
I'm
wanted
just,
to keep him in New Orleans.
Just comparing him over, well, that's exactly right. Comparing him over against sort of Kyle Kuzma just because of who's there. I've always wanted to keep him. I know how good of him. I mean, they drafted him seventh, so they know how good of a player he is. I think I like him because he's not the tallest forward in the world. Clearly not the tallest forward in the world, but he uses his size and his weight effectively when I see him play. I think
he's a new age bully ball.
Yeah,
it's bullying.
Yeah.
It's like what DeMarcus Cousins was doing at the height of his powers a few years ago at Sacramento. It's bully ball.
Yeah,
and he's really hard to stop. You know, was he 6'8", 6'9"?
Yeah.
He's still a little sort of one dimensional still because you know he's going left, but the numbers that he's putting up, you know, over 50% from the field, 23 points, 10.5 rebounds, 6 assists. There's only three other guys in the league that are putting up those numbers, and that's Jokic, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Domantas Sabonis. There's only four guys in the league that are putting up those sorts of numbers, and I think he is the man on that team, and the guy that really has to sort of look himself in the mirror at the moment is RJ Barrett. He is so inefficient. Good God, he's so inefficient.
Well,
if the Knicks are going to have success, he just needs to flat out be better.
They have to be because of what I've been reading just about the New York Knicks. Like he's one of those untouchable players with Mitchell Robinson. Like Julius Randle is at the moment. He's tradable if you want to look at it that way. So. And any team would benefit like from him, but it's just, RJ Barrett unfairly got, you know, when he got grouped in with Zion on that, I think he unfairly, got roped into like how potentially he could be. I don't know if he really was good. I haven't looked at all his college stuff and all that, but I don't know if he's as good as people think he is.
Like his college numbers, like him and Zion put up some, and Cam Reddish there, like they were a really good sort of, you know, three man hit there, at the Blue Devils, but they really had nobody else, so it was they were going as far as those three guys could carry him, and RJ was sort of looking like he could have been, you know, the more higher rated prospect until they actually started to play, and then they sort of started to realize how good Zion. You know, how good Zion is and what the potential he was going to be. And the third wheel there was Cam Reddish, and he started to flourish at the end of that season. I think they only made an Elite Eight, which is really disappointing for those guys. I think Krzyzewski sort of had high hopes for those three guys to sort of make it to either a Final Four or a national championship. But, look, RJ, I think RJ Barrett's numbers in college, I don't think are anything to be sneezed at.
No, but he's
almost the same as Julius Randle. He's still a little one dimensional. Like you know he's going left. Like he needs to develop that right hand. Like some of the numbers, the numbers that he's putting up this year are just oof. They're just it's a stink fest.
Yeah. Oh, look, I mean, what are the Knicks sitting at the moment in terms of their standings? I don't think they're they're not. I don't think they're doing that well. Well, I'm not saying
they've lost five. They've lost five on the trot.
Yeah.
And they're 5-8. So that means before they lost five on the trot, they were 5-3.
Fourth
or fifth in the Eastern Conference. So, you know, they've dropped right out to like 10th. You know, with that five losses on the trot, but it's. Yeah, it's they're going to be going through some growing pains there as well. You know, obviously with Tom Thibodeau, the new coach, in New York. So, That's, I mean, it's, but for me, I think, yeah, Julius Randle is absolutely the shining light there at the Knicks at the moment with, yeah, with some of the numbers that he's sort of putting up and just absolutely carrying that team no matter what.
Yeah, he sort of was, I think, a little bit last year as well, to be completely honest. He sort of started showing why they sort of signed him. I mean, him along with 20 other power forwards, but...
Oh, well, that's a bit of a logjam at power forward there, but, he's showing that he's justifying his pay packet at the moment as well, but unfortunately, it's just not resulting in any wins just because there's little to no depth there at the Knicks. So
that's
a little unfortunate, but yeah, like we said, there's a few teams that have started off hot that have dropped right off. Have a look at the Miami Heat.
Yeah. I mean, that's
finalists. They ain't playing so well.
That's a lot to do with Jimmy Butler being injured a fair bit too. So I think, he has been on and off the court a little bit. So I think they'll come back. I think they still have, they practically have the same spot, same team. So sometimes it's game time decision, but he's got sore knees and that. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I think it'll be the Bucks and Lakers if we're looking at it that way. But I mean, stranger things happens in that place in Orlando that I shall not speak of. So,
no, that's true. And you know, the once again, it's the daggers will be coming out for Giannis, if he can't get the Bucks to an Eastern Conference Finals or an NBA Finals. Like, that is just it's another one of those teams that's final, that's finals or bust. Not so much a championship, but finals or bust. Now that they've made the roster moves that they had, Chris Middleton is playing as good as he has. Giannis the other day went 1 for 10 from the free throw line, which just absolutely, that's Shaq type numbers. Like, that cannot happen, because if he becomes a liability from the free throw line, it just becomes a hackadacumpo. So you're not going to go anywhere like that. Like, all they're going to do is just keep fouling him and put him to the free throw line and say, prove it to us. You prove that you can make these shots and we'll stop fouling you. But while he can't make them and he's shooting like 57% from the free throw line, people are going to do that.
Just before we finish up, I just read a weird trade with Kyrie Irving. The reason I'm bringing it up, because it involves your Pelicans.
Oh, for God's sakes, I don't want him. No.
See, this is who they have to give up in terms of, this is on a proper, like, NBA analysis website, and who they have to give up in terms of, I guess, monetary sort of valuation. So all you receive is Kyrie. So Brooklyn receives JJ Redick, Eric Bledsoe, Jackson Hayes, and a couple of first rounders.
Absolutely not.
I knew you'd say that.
Absolutely not.
I mean,
and the deal clincher, there's JJ Redick. I don't give a shit what anybody says. He's in a bit of a slump at the moment, but he's got a 15-year career behind him where he's a proven shooter.
Oh, that's starting to be honest.
People are after him, wanting to throw petrol on him and set him alight. Like, he's having a bit of a form slump. Every shooter goes through a form slump. This guy's one of the best free throw shooters in NBA history.
To be honest, I think not going to happen, but say that trade coming out of it, that'd be the bigger winner is for Brooklyn, because they pick up JJ Redick, a proven winner.
Yeah, absolutely.
So right, exactly.
That's just such a ludicrous trade. Just going back to full circle, what we said, Kyrie, the most games he's played in a year is 75. In 14-15 season. So 51 that games, was, 59 games, 71 games, 53 games, 72 games, 60, 67, 20. He's not healthy. He can't stay healthy. He's never been healthy. He missed a lot of his freshman year playing for Duke. He's just not a guy. He's just not a guy that's gonna give you 75 plus games. Done it once in his career.
Was that 2014 and 15? I'm just trying to find it. Was that the winning Cavs season?
No, that probably would have been the year before. Okay. That was either the year before LeBron came back or the year that LeBron did come back.
Okay. I don't know. He's
well, they went to four straight NBA finals, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so that's the first year that LeBron came back.
He's one of the most peculiar...
second year LeBron came back.
He's one of the most peculiar players that not ever watched, but ever sort of, you know, followed or listened to if you're following NBA. All that Earth Flat stuff. I don't know. It's like he also wants to be in the news all the time. I don't know. He's an enigma. He's really an enigma.
Yeah, he is. He is.
He's an enigma because you don't know what you're going to get.
He is Edward E. Nigma. Like, he just... Yeah, it seems like he's trying to be smarter than everybody else.
Yeah, that's probably it. Because he's a brilliant player. When he was at the Cavs, those clutch shots and that. He's really good player.
He hit the most clutch shot in Cavaliers history. And in NBA, finals history.
That was a good clutch shot, that one, definitely.
That's what I mean. Like he's a clutch performer.
Yeah, he is.
But he's just not on the court all that often. And then that's what I mean. Over the last few seasons, he's gone cuckoo.
Isn't that ironic that we're saying he's a clutch performer, but we're also saying in the same breath he might have to be the third option on the team? That's
unbelievable.
The Nets are going to. Oh my God, we'll just have to wait and see. I guess that'll do it for this week's podcast for the NBA. Don't forget to follow us on our socials, which is Facebook. Easily just searching, typing in Final Play Podcast. It comes up straight away. And Twitter at Final Play Pod, where we'll retweet, repost anything that happens with Woj and Shams and all the ones that sort of break all that news about trades and injuries and what's happening with Kyrie Irving, everything really. So,
just the latest Kyrie Irving news.
Also, you can get our pods obviously on Facebook, but definitely also on gimco.com.au. Sorry, which is a trading cards extravaganza.
That's what it is.
I know exactly how I'm going to finish up because I think I've used the word so many times this year, and it's. My name's Jason Enigma Smith.
Exactly.
I think a few players are an Enigma.
That's right. Enigma. He is the Riddler. Edward Enigma.
He's Jim Carrey. We don't even know it. Anyway.
Exactly. It's unbelievable. Like what. Just the media circus that's going to be around the Brooklyn Nets for the rest of this season is going to be going to be crazy to sort of watch.
Then thankfully that until they get like all the vaccines and all that and have crowds, but thankfully they don't have to be in their faces. It's all just over, you know, Zoom and all that, like what we're doing.
You know, things like that, which sort of makes it a little bit. Oh no, I guess it makes it a little bit more impersonal, I think. But you know, and you can.
It's weird. Have you ever seen it?
Just before we go as well, like it is. Like I get it. ESPN, you know, they're the worldwide leader and everything. How can they afford to send both of their commentators to their nationally televised games, but TNT can't send their guys to nationally televised games? How terrible does it sound with that second and a half delay?
Oh, I know it does.
It's so unprofessional.
There's only one word for it, and that's Disney money.
Yeah, what? Turner's got no money? Ted Turner ain't got no money?
Not compared to Disney.
I get that. But come on. It just sounds so bad.
I
love watching the TNT games. I love watching Inside the NBA. But, you know, I love Reggie Miller. I love Grant Hill on the calls.
Chris Webber.
Yeah, Kevin Harlan. Like, I love it, but it's near unwatchable because as they're sort of speaking like we are now, you can do that like we're doing it right now, you know, over Skype, and yeah, whether you have a little bit of delay or not, but when you play by play, you can't do it. It sounds so terrible.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. You can't. There's no reason why you can't. So, you would think so. Surely, well, I'm assuming it's a monetary thing. It's the only way to put it. Or they don't want to travel. It's one of those. So, I don't know.
It's got to be a cost-cutting thing. It just absolutely does. And it just sounds so bad. You're just like, oh my, yeah, it's just unprofessional.
Yeah, that's fair.
It just sounds unprofessional.
Do you want to sign off?
Well, I guess I'll sign off as Miles. Give me some of that Disney money, Plum.
Give me some. Oh, imagine just like Apple. Imagine getting them before like they took on like Star Wars and the MCU and that. That would be.
Oh my God.
Yeah. You'd be just laughing all the way to the bank. Literally.
Yes. Yeah, like literally. Yeah, like literally.
Literally.
Yeah.
All right.
Just give me some of that Disney money.
Have a good week, everybody. Some of that Avengers money. So, yeah.